Next case is number 23-1234. Sarah Rosenberg as trustee of Douglas Rosenberg 2004 Trust against PHL Variable Insurance Company et al. Mr. Broadbent?
Good afternoon now, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Michael Broadbent. I appear today on behalf of the appellant, also the plaintiff below, Sarah Rosenberg, as trustee of the Douglas Rosenberg 2004 Trust. As we've laid out in our briefs, Ms. Rosenberg asks the court to reverse the district court's judgment of summary judgment on all counts as to PHL Vic.
Did you reserve time for rebuttal?
I did, Your Honor. I'm sorry, 2 minutes.
Very good.
Happy, of course, this afternoon to address whatever questions the court has, but to the extent I can do so, there are two high-level issues I intend to address today. The first, and perhaps the most pervasive error, in our view for the district court, is the resolution of factual disputes and the making of finding of factual inferences that went in favor of the moving party, PHL Vic, as opposed to the non-moving party, Mrs. Rosenberg. In fact, if you review the appellee's brief, they don't really fully defend the acts of the district court in this regard, and as we've explained, and I'm happy to address further today, we think it's fairly clear that if for no other reason than the district court's decision to do so, that fact resolution issue is sufficient to warrant reversal.
So let me just jump in. You say district court erroneously entered judgment against many of the misrepresentation claims, but didn't your client receive several price quotes, different amounts, to convert to Paul 4? And then wasn't there a lot of didn't PHL let your client know that Paul 4 would not be available after December 31st, 2019? Didn't they tell you both those things?
Your Honor, PHL Vic did say both of those things, but those two pieces of information were not sufficient in terms of the obligation imposed on PHL Vic here, number one.
So it seems then that if they weren't sufficient, you're not, as I think of misrepresentation case law, there's two strands. There are material misrepresentation strand, and then there's material omission strand. And so it looks like they told you, your client, these are the quotes, and Paul 4 is not available in 2020. And now what you're saying is you wanted more information. And what exactly more information do you think, were they supposed to tell you all of the options that would be available and the pricing in 2020? Were they supposed to give that degree of a preview?
Your Honor, I do want to make sure we're talking about the same thing only briefly. The quotes that were received were only for the Paul 4, right? So we didn't receive any quotes for any future policy after 2019. Yeah, after the end of 2019. So there was no, the Rosenbergs weren't told.
I mean, what if they'd asked for a price quote for their conversion term would have probably ended. But let's just say they said, out of curiosity, what would the conversion rates be in 2026? That's not a material omission, because that's just, that's too far down the road. I guess what I'm sitting there thinking is, when we talk about fraud, we talk about a broad societal duty to provide information. And the question is, does PHL have a broad societal duty to provide information about price quotes for policies that it may or may not offer in the future? And I'm just, that's a tough one.
You know, I don't think you have to go that far to reverse here. When you talk about the fraud claim, which requires more than, say, the UTP CPL claim or the implied covenant claim, but just focusing on the fraud, as Your Honor is doing, the fact is PHLVIC knew at the time it was asked how it would price these policies and what the specific policy would be. So this wasn't very far in the future. It's a matter of weeks, days between event A and event B.
Why are they under a duty to tell you what their future pricing would be? You have to show that they're under a duty to tell you. They can say, hey, we don't want to tell you what our future pricing would be. We just don't want to. We want to release that. We have a release date for what our future. A lot of people do this. They say, hey, you know, if you're an employee of the federal government, you might want to know what your benefits rates look like the next year. But we have an open season, and we get a preview before the open season as to what that is. Some of us would like to know way before that. But the answer is no, there's a window. I don't think it's fraud to say we'll tell you what that is 30 days before the window. I mean, you know, yes, a lot of people would like to know 150 days before the window, but is that fraud when you say we aren't telling you until a little bit before?
Yes, Your Honor, we think so. And two additional responses here. The first is, I think the whole set of communications, which, to take a brief tangent, the district court defined in a far more limited way than the record actually reflected, right? So we don't have, the district court did not not take into consideration the full scope of conversations that the trust had with PHLVIC. But all of those conversations had to be viewed in the context of the duty that's imposed on insurers when dealing with its insureds to act in the utmost good faith and to act as honestly as possible when asked a question directly. It would be different, Your Honor, for example, if the Rosenbergs had not asked them if the pricing information was available and PHLVIC had not responded, it is not available, or we don't know what it is.
Let's assume they had a duty, and let's assume they breached it. What's your justifiable reliance, particularly because you acted upon that guidance to convert at least $10 million of policy? So where's the reliance, and why was it justifiable?
So it's justified in the sense of the absence of information regarding what was available then, and the fact that it had not yet been decided for the future year, as far as the Rosenbergs knew, right, which is different than what PHLVIC knew, left the Rosenbergs in the position of believing that it would be the same as it had historically been. That's number one, in which there had been multiple options. And two, based on their expectations in purchasing a term policy with the ability to convert, that there would in fact be a commercially viable option, one that would exist that if they were to purchase it, wouldn't require them to spend nearly as much in premiums as it would take to self-insure.
So that's the crux of the case, that they didn't replace it with a commercially viable option?
That's part of it, Your Honor. I think.
Are you suggesting that the $10 million purchase was not commercially viable?
The remembrance policy that was offered in 2020.
No, I'm talking about the $10 million, wasn't that a conversion of Paul the Fourth?
So there was the conversion that did happen in 2019. That was that was viable, and in fact,
it's Paul Ford. That's the Paul 10 Ford, million, right. All right. So that was a viable option.
That was.
So why couldn't they have done 15 million instead of 10 million? Was something prohibiting them from converting 15 instead of 10?
Well, the trust owning the policy had the right to convert it, to keep it, to sell part of it, to sell the entire thing. What the trust
that sounds like a no.
No, nothing.
My question was, they had a $20 million policy.
Yes.
They were told by Waters, they at some point late in the game, they became aware that was, they need to take action before it lapsed, right? Before the end of the year.
If they were going to convert the $10 million that they wanted to convert.
I didn't ask about the $10 million. I'm talking generically. They had a $20 million policy, and they knew they had to do something with it, right? So they could have. In fact, wasn't there evidence in the record that they asked for quotes for what it would be to convert 1 million, 5 million, 10 million?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So did they, if they could have converted it to 1 million, 5 million, 10 million, it would seem to follow they could have converted it to 20 million if they had so chose.
They could have. And in that fact, that's what they would have done had they received the information.
All right. What information did they need to have in order to say, we're in for 20 instead of in for 10 on the conversion?
We think it's the information that PHL Vic had, that the only policy it would offer in 2020 was the remembrance policy. And two, the way in which that remembrance policy would be priced.
I mean, you know, that first one, like, they told them that Paul Four wasn't coming out in 2020. So, I mean, you know.
It's sort of obvious you're left with remembrance, right? And remember, what Waters told her clients, I think this was Melissa Waters, told the clients that, hey, this new policy is going to be whole life, not universal. And that comes with some problems because it's more expensive and it's more variable. Did she not tell the clients that?
Yes, she did, Your Honor.
So they're on notice that this option for the remembrance policy is rather undefined, rather risky. But I guess the point of your appeal is that it didn't have to be undefined. It should have been more specific. PHL Vic should have said, look, you better not convert only 10 million. You better convert 20 million because your other option is quite a bit worse. It would put you in quite a bit worse situation. Is that what you wanted them to say?
Yes.
Or needed them to say?
Yeah, and in fact, their own internal team said, we need to tell people that this is going to change because we're going to be putting them in a much worse position after the end of 2019.
Well, isn't there evidence that they did say it's going to change? That's what caused the $10 million conversion?
Well, the $10 million...
The $10 million conversion didn't come out of nowhere.
The Rosenbergs converted $10 million because they were seeking to convert and sell $10 million worth of insurance.
Right, and they couldn't sell it. It didn't catch, right?
They did sell that $10 million.
Yes. Oh, they did? Okay.
Yes.
I thought initially there were some problems with trying to flip it.
The buyer was being difficult.
Oh, that's right, because there were comments made from Mr. Rosenberg that don't really trust what I was saying there because I was puffing because we were having trouble getting the buyer on board, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So they start receiving the notices from the specific warnings on the conversion quote saying that Paul Four will no longer be available, and the trust receives those notices. So that's where I'm back to. Where's the, at that point, where's the reliance?
So here's the issue, and Judge Phipps, it goes a little bit to your question, what was not enough about what they said. There's remembrance, which exists, and there's Paul Fork, which exists, both of which are in 2019. What PHL Vic conveys is that is two pieces of information, right? That Paul Four is ending, and that even if you accept that the Meredith Waters email reflects information directly from PHL Vic, which it's unclear if it does or does not, that the other policy would be whole life. PHL Vic didn't say, and the other policy would be remembrance. Identifying it only as a whole life policy implies the existence of a third policy type. At a minimum, at summary judgment, it's enough that a jury could infer that from the fact that knowing that it would be remembrance, knowing that it would be better to tell people.
Probably a mere scintilla of evidence, but.
Your Honor,
I mean, look, so I'm reading the case law. I like one of the, there's this eye-popping case from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, at least when I read it, it wasn't the outcome I expected. It's this Gregg versus Ameriprise Financial, Inc., which basically says under the UTPCPL, we don't care, it's strict liability. We don't care about mental state. So this could be a really good case for people, you know, wanting to bring fraud claims because somehow in a fraud claim we don't look to mental state according to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So this might be a good case for you. But even there was a claim of a material misrepresentation that was made. And so you've got, I think, an abnormally strong case, a very, very, very strong case, at least stronger than what my intuition would be. And so I'm not saying it's wrong, nothing like just stronger than what my intuition would be. But even in that great case, you still required a material misrepresentation. And so you're coming with a theory of omission, but not material misrepresentation. And so it seems like you need that great case applied to an even new frontier in order to win, and that's a lot.
Your Honor, I'm past my time, but I'm going to continue to answer the questions as they come. I think we do have a material misrepresentation here, if it's required, number one. Number two, just to back up.
What is it?
So
what statement? Who said what to whom?
The clearest example of this is in the communications that Mr. Rosenberg had with Elba Perez Martin. And he confirmed this with her after the fact.
2020?
Yes. And he asked her about the conversations that she had had with the trust in 2019. And she acknowledged that she told them that the information was not available, when in fact it was available. That is the misrepresentation. And again, saying it is not available implies that it's in a state of flux, that it is undecided, that it is not known at that time that it will be exactly what it turned out to be, as they knew, Remembrance, which was, again, commercially not a viable product for folks at a significantly higher face value.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Broadbent. You've reserved time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Gaynor.
Gaynor, Your Honor.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Jared Gaynor for Apelli PHL Variable Insurance Company. I am happy to address any topics the court would like to hear from. I will start by just explaining what a conversion option is. Under a policy, the conversion option on the term policy gives that policyholder essentially the right to step into a product then being offered by the insurance company for sales generally without going through an underwriting process. So if at any point during your term before the conversion option, if you want to step into a permanent product that's offered by that company, they'll put you into it without making you go through any type of underwriting. There is no question that PHL complied with its obligations under that express contract here. We converted 10 million of their term policy at the request to a Paul IV product in 2019. Any further obligation relating to that conversion that's not expressed within that contract has to be implied through the covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
All right, and why wasn't it a breach of that covenant when in September of 2019, your client knew that Remembrance would be a financially untenable option for people like the plaintiffs in this case?
There's no evidence that my client knew it was a financially untenable option. It was an insurance product approved for issuance in the state of Pennsylvania at lower price.
100,000 max.
At the Commonwealth of face amount, yes.
Right. So you look at your books, and clearly you've got people on your books who are well above 100,000, including these folks. So shouldn't notice go out to them to say, you know, heads up? What I'm driving at is, isn't it the case that by fall of 2019, the only real choice that people like the plaintiffs had in this case was to convert Paul IV before it lapsed or to let it lapse?
No, Your Honor. They still received their full 20 years of term coverage, and they still had the opportunity twice to convert to a whole life policy. And the fact that the policy costs more does not make it...
Remembrance?
Remembrance.
But yes. I thought Remembrance had 100,000 cap.
In 2019. In 2020, the company applied, they submitted for regulatory approval and got the regulatory approval to issue that at higher face amounts. So starting on January 1st, 2020, the company had the ability to issue a Remembrance product at $5, $10, $15, $20 million. We gave conversion quotes both in 2020 and in 2021 prior to the expiration of the conversion period to the plaintiffs.
And when did your clients know what those quotes would be, which turned out to be quite a bit higher than the premiums paid on the Paul IV policy?
The customer service representatives who are forward facing did not have that information available to them to provide to the public until 2020. The company itself was in the process of building out the Remembrance products and securing the necessary regulatory approvals to sell it at a higher face amount during the December period of 2020. 19. They secured those regulatory approvals, but they could not actually issue a remembrance product in 2019 above $100,000 and comply with the law.
So it sounds like the answer to my question is sometime in December of 2019, they learned what the pricing would be on that product.
Learned is, an actuary could sit down and make a individualized calculation for anything at any point. The company employs actuaries. Before the infrastructure was built out to allow the company to actually give a consumer a quote, bind the company to that, that couldn't occur until regulatory approval and until the policy was available for issuance in 2020.
So as I conceive of your opponent's case, it goes like this. It says, in 2019, you know, we're looking at expiring term policy. We'd like to convert. We'd like to go without underwriting. This would be great. And then they're going to have these two options. They have remembrance and they have Paul IV. And they say, okay, well, you know, our terms, our ability to convert is going to go into, it's going to extend into 2020. But right now in 2019, you're thinking, we've got these two. There's remembrance has a lower conversion rate. We don't know if we can convert the whole thing. Paul IV has a high one. And then they hear from the company, oh, hey, Paul IV is not going to be available anymore. But in 20, so that's fine. Paul IV changes in 2020. But you never told them that remembrance was going to change in 2020. And so it's a little weird to say, hey, Paul IV is changing. We'll let you know that. But remembrance is going to change too, and it's going to be kind of your only option, or at least as we can see it, because we're going to do away with the cap and you can convert a huge amount. It makes sense a little bit that they weren't asking about converting to remembrance in 2019 because they wanted to convert more. And so as I conceive of your opponent's case, the strongest point could be we had two policy options in 2019. You gave us a limited preview of one of them, but not the other. And under the duties that inure to insurance companies, you put us in a situation that we could not make a really good, intelligent decision. The degree of uncertainty that we had that you didn't have was a real problem. But why is that wrong? Is that just too halcyon a reading of their case?
I'm not sure it's too halcyon a reading of their case, but there has to be an obligation for the company to disclose what its pricing offerings are going to be in 2020. There has to be that duty that exists. And to say that an insurance company has an obligation to say, well, geez, this particular policyholder may want the product we're offering right now more than the product we're going to offer in the future. That doesn't inure from the insured-insurer relationship. But that creates a fiduciary.
I guess my thought is there was two options in 2019. They both changed in 2020. Your client told them that one of them was going to change, but not the other. And so I guess my thought is that a material omission to say, hey, you have two options? We definitely want to tell you one of them's going to change. Not going to have Paul IV next year. And then say nothing about the changes to the other. When they're trying to make a decision, aren't they trying to make a decision maybe between those two? And if you don't tell them that the other's going to really, really change, that's kind of strange.
And to be clear, Your Honor, in 2019, there was a single option that was approved for sale that was a universal life or whole life policy in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. That was Paul IV. There was no remembrance product approved.
That became the 2020.
That became in 2020. The regulatory filings were done to allow the company to issue the Paul, the remembrance product at above $100,000 in Pennsylvania. And whether or not the policy is available or not, there's nothing for a jury to weigh in on. It's a question of law. Have the regulatory filings been done and is that product available? So what we told them in 2019 was this is the product that's available, Paul IV, and if you want it, you have to convert by the end of the year. That satisfied any duty the company had in terms of the communications it was having, because the express provision of the contract is that you have a right to convert into any policy we are offering right now. It doesn't say we're going to tell you the pricing next month or in the future. Next month is President's Day. I might want to go buy a new phone or a car or something like that, and it'd be really helpful for me to know if the company's going to have a President's Day sale. If I call them up and say, what is your, you know, what is your President's Day sales look like? And they tell me no, or that's, you know, that's not available.
Would the case be different if Douglas Rosenberg had called and identified himself as a client rather than calling anonymously on December 10th of 2019 and said, I need to talk to somebody because we have a very large policy here and I need to know what my options are?
It's possible. And
how would the case come out differently if the record indicated that conversation had occurred?
If the record indicated that there was an actual conversation in which he had identified himself and actually requested a quote on the product that was going to be available, it's possible that there would have been a different outcome because it would have gone through a different work stream. You know, he would have gotten to talk to the higher ups.
What would the higher ups have said?
I mean, it's speculation.
I assume that, well.
But
play it out with me. Yeah. I assume the answer, if they're telling the truth, the answer would be, well, you're not eligible for the remembrance product now because it's a $100,000 limit. You're well above that. You can convert to Paul 4. Okay. I don't really like the pricing on Paul 4. What are my other options? Well, I can't promise you that we're working on some stuff for whole life. Maybe something like remembrance that would be above the $100,000 threshold, but we haven't received any regulatory approval for that yet. So we really don't know. Is that what the conversation would have been?
That's what the conversation would be, or the conversation would be, we are not providing that information to our customers right now. That if you want a quote in for what's going to be available in 2020, you can.
The only thing we have for you is take or leave it, convert Paul 4.
Yeah, your right under the contract is to convert. To convert to a commercially reasonable product. It's not to convert to a product with a certain premium level. It's what products we have available, what products
we're selling. Clearly, somehow they gathered enough information that they did convert a sizable chunk of it.
Absolutely. And
what information was that, according to your view of the case?
From our view of the case, what they have is a contractual right that they can exercise at any point to convert. And they called in and they asked for quotes. They got a $20 million quote. They got a $10 million, a $5 million, and a $1 million. And they chose, for their own purposes, to convert $10 million.
How do we know they got a $20 million quote? Where in the record is that?
It's in the record. It is at 491.
So your theory of the case then is that if they had enough information to purchase to convert 10 million, it follows that they had enough information to convert 20 million.
They had all
5 million. They were able to exercise their choice as consumers at that time.
Yes, they were. Again, at that point in time, what their right is to convert under the policy. And we also have to remember what they were told by their agent, by their own representative, by the person that they were relying on for
financial
advice.
Well, the record's pretty fuzzy on that, isn't it?
I don't believe so at all, Your Honor. And they try to have some different interpretation, but at
Waters, I'm referring to Waters' testimony, Meredith Waters, I think I called her Melissa before, apologies to her. I think she said things like, it's going to be a whole life product, and that's challenging in certain regards. That's why I called it fuzzy. Is that not is it clear to you? And if so, tell us why.
At 750, we asked Douglas Rosenberg what his understanding was of the Meredith Waters email. So we're not looking for any interpretation that might be gleaned from it. This is his actual interpretation. Did you understand, based on this email, that as of December 10th, 2019, your mother and you had been advised by your insurance agent that the products that Phoenix term policies convert to starting in 2020 would no longer be a universal life policy, but would be a whole life policy, and that product would cost more in premiums? Answer, yes. An unequivocal yes. They knew, as of December 10th, 2019, that the product that was going to be available in 2020 was going to be a whole life policy, and it was going to be more expensive. At the end of the day, to go back to Judge Maddie's question earlier about justifiable reliance, There's also a causation issue here. What they are complaining about is that if you had told me specifically how much the 2020 product was going to cost, I would have changed my course of action. But without an obligation, a legal obligation to provide that specific pricing information, they're not entitled to it. It's not a matter of omission or confusion or materiality. The gist of the action doctrine and what the court in the motion to dismiss order, which is not challenged, they made that claim in their complaint that they had had imperfect information, that they were denied access to information that they had asked for. And what the court said is the gist of the action bars all of those claims. The only thing you can move forward on is the misrepresentation claim, the claim that you asked a question, is the information available? And you were told, no, it's not available. You've got to go talk to the higher ups. They have to show that's false. There wasn't enough, the court properly found that there was no support in the record that conversation took place and was false. She assumed it took place, and she said there's no evidence that it was false. But beyond that, you have to show that you changed your approach. You relied in some way on the fact that the pricing information wasn't available. But what they're saying is we acted differently because we didn't know what that pricing information was. So at the heart of the matter, unless there's a legal obligation to provide that specific pricing information, none of their other claims can be supported by causation or justifiable reliance. I'm at the end of my time, but we'll, of course.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gaynor. We'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Broadbent.
I thank the court and the clerks and the court staff.
I will attempt to be as efficient as possible, but of course, if there's further questions, please let me know. There's something very different about saying, I don't know what the information is versus I can't tell you. And what the Rosenbergs were told was that was effectively that the company didn't know. And that statement was false. Alba Perez Martin confirmed that that's what was conveyed. And the evidence shows that that statement was false. That's a misrepresentation. And the duty isn't simply to tell the price information. The duty is to answer honestly when asked. That's a fundamental duty imposed on insurers. And you can look at it in different ways. But if an insurance company is asked directly a question, it can't lie. PHLVIC did not honestly convey the information, did not accurately convey the information.
It still yields two outcomes. One is, at that point, if you had been told what you argue is the truth, we know this won't be available. We were told what you were actually told. We don't know. You're both paths lead to indeterminacy to the future. So what was your reliance where in there is there something that you can say, well, we relied on because we thought, I don't know, left open the option of what?
So I think it's important to keep in mind that the trust's conversion option did not expire for another year and a half. It ran until May 2021. The option to keep the policy available for another year and a half or so without paying increased premiums. And so financially, that's generally the smarter play. Don't convert to the more expensive permanent policy. Keep your term policy in a term position as long as you can.
But if the answer is no, it won't be available, then you would the reasonable person would think, oh, I must act on that information. If the answer is, I don't know, the answer is the same, isn't it?
No, because the company, if it did not know, then it meant that the company did not have available to it at that time the policy that it was going to offer. It could have been a Paul 5. They could have been developing a different policy. It could have been a whole life policy that was priced priced in a way that made it viable. Right. As PHLVIC's own witnesses testified, the mere fact of knowing that it's whole life doesn't convey the totality of what remembrance is. It doesn't convey that it will be more expensive or the degree to which.
How could they convey the totality of something in December of 2019 that hadn't been approved until 2020?
They knew what they were going to offer, and they knew the price of it no later than December 12, 2019, when the pricing tool was available. And the idea that the court adopted, the PHLVIC suggested, was that there's some difference between the customer-facing representatives and the company itself. Frankly, that doesn't make a lot of sense. The company representatives are the only way for the company to access, and no later than that point, December 12th, the company did in fact know what they would be offering and how much it would cost and how they could price it. I'm out of time, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Broadbent. We thank you for the argument, and Mr. Gaynor, the court will take the matter under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.